All right, all right. Good morning to all of you, and welcome to the Bitcoin Veterans Spaces number 3. You will all be happy to know that the Bitcoin price is still right at about 59,000. Oh, look at that. Close to 60,000. So all is well, apparently, as we continue this sideways grind from hell. Where the hell is Dr. Jeff when you need him? So good morning. Our mission here is basically to take all of the new people that are wanting to come and learn about Bitcoin and share what Bitcoin's all about from the, you know, from the perspective of long-term Bitcoiners. And also, obviously, the show is hosted by veterans, but we're just a bunch of military vets that are also Bitcoiners. And we have reasons for why we're doing that. We can talk about that later. But yeah, thanks for being here. We're excited. We also have a daily intelligence bulletin, which is in the nest, by the way, that goes out every morning and is kind of a little brain dump on the recent news. Last night, we also do a podcast. We did ours last night. It's like a video pod, but we also stream it live here on Twitter. Last night's pod is what we're calling the Way of Men, and we basically talk about stuff like that on the pod. Go check that out. That's also in the nest. Good morning to everybody. I'm joined by my co-host, Coleman. Good morning, Coleman.
Good morning, everybody.
We've got Terrence up here. We've got Mickey Koss. Terrence Yang is also here. Good morning.
Uppercase and lowercase Terrence are reporting, sir.
Roger that. We have the Terrences. Shout out to Randy K in the audience, the other Jordan Bitballer, OpDoc Hunter, Just Stack, Toki, hi, how's it going? I haven't seen you in a long time. Duke of Milan, what's up, my man? Just doing some shout outs to some of our folks that are regular, well, I say regular listeners. It feels like regular listeners because some of you may or may not know. I used to do this a lot a couple of years ago. Anyway, let's dig into some stuff. You guys want to talk about some Bitcoin things? I want to just quickly remind everybody that the 10,000 Bitcoin that Max gave to Alex Jones is currently worth about $600 million. Can you imagine? Oh my goodness. What else?
He also gave some to Russell Brand too, didn't he? He gave him 1,000 Bitcoin that he lost.
Yeah, both those guys lost their Bitcoin. Holy crap, right? So Russell Brand's, I guess, would be worth about 60 mil today. US dollars. Sucks to be damn, I guess. How about that unrealized cap gains tax? You guys heard about this? Is it real?
Yeah, but I don't think it applies to anybody in this space. I think I was trying to dig into it a little bit, and the 25% unrealized capital gains is only for people with a net worth of $100 million, which I'm not for. It definitely is a slippery slope, but as of right now, it doesn't apply to us.
It'll apply to all Bitcoiners pretty soon, though, right? Also, you're right, but I think like most taxes, they've sort of come for just a small cadre of people. And then, you know, over time, just like many things the government does, it bleeds into and widens and starts to include other people. So it's sort of that slow bleed that you have to be careful of, that once we start to normalize unrealized gains, that would be the danger. For us to just say that it's okay for anyone, because then it'll leak into everybody else.
Yeah, I agree. That's how the income tax started. It was like, you know, the top 1% of people or whatever, and then they normalized it, and it slowly spread throughout. Now we're all tax cattle, right? And so I signed the unrealized gain tax, deeply immoral. I don't care if it's $100 million, $1 billion, $10. It effectively means that nobody owns anything ever. And so it's sort of the same concept as the house now, because you have So you have your house, and even if you pay it off, you owe your real estate taxes. And then, you know, you might have owned the house 30, 40 years, but if you can't afford the taxes anymore, you're fucked. And now the government owns your house. And so that's effectively what the unrealized gain tax does for everything. And so now you truly never own anything except for Bitcoin, because I lost my keys. So tax it, I guess, but I don't have it anymore. Sorry, government.
Well, if I was the government, I would tax you, Mickey, because you look like $100, $100 million. Look at you. Look at you with that beard and what you're wearing there. You look amazing.
There was a wedding, and if you zoom in, actually the tie, so my daughter picked out this tie. It was $2 at a thrift shop, and it's got this really obnoxious, like, 1985 style eagle on it, like screaming. So it's pretty sick.
The unrealized capital gains tax would affect pretty much everyone here if people have to start liquidating their assets to pay their taxes and crashing all the markets, cause the housing, value their stocks, bonds, and Bitcoin if people are dumb enough to sell.
Well, I mean, then
if they're selling their ETFs to pay their taxes.
So what happens if it goes up and it goes down and it goes up and it goes down? Do you keep paying cap gains every time it goes up after it went down? That seems a little brutal.
Yeah, is there an unrealized refund if the market goes down?
I couldn't find anything on that. That was my thoughts as well. But the thing I find concerning is you'd have to list every single asset you own. If they want to put these unrealized capital gains taxes on everything.
Yeah, which is over in the EU, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make everybody list every asset that they have. It's like the full-on WEF, you will own nothing and be happy thing. Like, all the lizards are just going to confiscate all your shit, and you're just going to deal with it. Like, congrats.
And if you don't fill the paperwork out properly, they don't save your spot in the breadlines.
It reminds me of that, like, analogy of the frog in the pot of boiling water. You know, the story goes is that you have a pot, you put it on the stove, and it's room temperature or whatever. You throw a frog in there, and the frog's nice and fine. And you raise it 1 degree at a time, really slowly. And what the story says is that the frog never jumps out of the pot. It just gets boiled alive because it just happens slowly over time. And to Mickey's original point, where the income tax in the United States only applied to the top 1%, it was originally 3% was the income tax, and it only applied to people who were making over $800 a year. You see the pattern? They're like, well, it's only going to apply to this group of people. And because it's so few of us, well, everybody should be okay with that, right? And it's only 3%, so it's okay. Yeah, sure it is. And now, currently, I mean, if you combine what people are taxed at today, you know, whatever the rate is, up to 30-ish some odd percent, and then you think about the fact that a 2% rate of inflation per year compounding will essentially take half of your wealth by the time that you're age 50. What the hell is left? It's
and let's be honest, pretty wild. It's not really 2% either, right? Like, that's just the CPI. We know our true inflation is probably anywhere from 9 to 20%, depending on what your basket is. Yeah, Alex, it's crazy.
Have you seen, I saw this tweet the other day about, there's this guy went to Whataburger and he bought one cheeseburger, a small fries, and a drink, and it was like $26. It's like, oh my God, what is going on here?
I think there was five guys.
And if people are, you know, they fled the dollar for real estate and stocks and bonds, you know, this might cause the opposite to happen, people to flee those assets to go back to the dollar, which is being debased, which would just cause the system to further collapse.
Well, that's okay, where good the morning. Thesis, go ahead, Alex.
No, please continue. I was just going to say good morning to Vangel. I'm not sure I said your name right. I apologize if I massacred it.
Oh, it's okay. Everyone does. It's Vangel. So I wanted to add on to what you guys were saying about that, you know, it's going to apply to certain people. that make over $800. Like, how ridiculous is that to us today, where that's way below the poverty line? As inflation constantly pushes up wages, if you say, like, I know Biden was saying something like, this is only going to apply to people that make over $400,000 a year, something like that. Well, in the future, what if the average income is $400,000 a year, but a loaf of bread is $20 or $30 a loaf of bread, and now you apply to this tax because inflation is going to push everything up into higher and higher tax brackets, so then they tax you at higher and higher percentages, even if you're still the poor class. I just thought that was interesting. I wanted to add that.
Good point. Good morning, Dom Bay. What's up, bro? Also, shout out to, where'd he go? Joe Carlosari in the audience. Throwing you an invite if you want to come up. You and Tom.
Is this the first time you have Terrence Squared, like, on a space in a while?
Yes.
No, we did that yesterday. You just weren't here.
Oh, okay, I missed it. Sorry then. Non-starter. What's up, y'all? What's going on? What's the latest?
Unrealized cap gains taxes. 44.5% cap gains taxes. Just all the things, you know, standard tax slave kind of stuff.
Yeah, that sounds terrible, you know. Tax my gains, not my, don't let me write off my losses.
Yeah, that's the rough part. Well, all of it's rough, but I mean, like, that it's kind of hypocritical, right? It's just And then we were asking the question, well, what happens if it goes down and then it goes back up and goes down and goes back up? I mean, you pay gains constantly on that? I don't know.
Yeah, you got,
how do they figure that out?
You got like 200 in Bitcoin and you owe a million in taxes off the volatility.
Well, they're big on talking about this, but how many of the politicians will vote for it considering their portfolios?
Yeah, it has zero chance of it getting through. It's just a talking point. There's no way.
I don't know, man. Life has gotten really weird. And I think it's going to continue to get weird the closer we get to November. It's just a really bizarre time to be alive right now.
Hey, Uppercase, did you watch the convention last night? Curious what your thoughts are.
I did not watch it. I listened to part of Michelle Obama's speech and all of President Obama's. Did you?
Yeah, I did. And I mean, obviously, I disagree with a lot of what I heard, but I will tell you, it was refreshing just to hear a couple of people that could actually articulate. Hearing Michelle and then Obama talk just was refreshing that there are politicians that can form sentences.
I thought the killer line, or one of them, was when Michelle said something like, and they obviously have great, good speechwriters. She said something like, most of us don't have affirmative action for wealth or inheritance or something. That was pretty killer.
What does that mean?
Meaning, like, if you're a trust fund kid, right? Like, you can benefit from money, connections, privilege, just trust fund privilege, as opposed to the rest of us who do not.
Which is interesting, right? Because people are going to work hard to be successful. They want to provide a better life for their kids so that their kids can have that start. And now it's almost being demonized, or I'm sure it wants to be taxed in some form of equity so that everyone doesn't. I heard Harris talking about not everyone starts at the same place, so everyone needs to get different levels of basically the wealth distribution to equal things out.
That is the current system, right? We already have inheritance tax, and we already have some wealth redistribution. That's what the income tax and inheritance tax does.
I would say there's shit tons of income redistribution going on. I mean, just look at everybody's taxes, period. Okay, so I was listening to this interview that had Lynn Alden on it, and she was basically saying that if you take defense the interest payments, Social Security, and Medicare that eats up the entirety of incoming tax receipts, right? So everything else, essentially, if that's correct, and it's Lynn Alden, so I think it's probably correct, then everything else the government is spending money on, they're basically printing. This is wild, wild. And all of that is destroying our purchasing power. So, I mean, yeah. That analogy about the tick on the dog, the tick being absolutely gigantic and like five times the size of the dog at this point, and the poor dog is just like crushed under its weight, and it's crawling across the ground, sliding across the ground, leaving a trail of blood as this tick is sucking the life out of it. That's what's happening in the United States of America today.
Alex, I'll tell you the solution for this. And it's not complex, it's very simple. You go down to your closest farmer's market and you get a jar of fresh harvested wildflower and orange blossom honey. You get to sit there with a spoon and you house the whole thing in one sitting, and you will feel right as rain, and you will not be worried about wealth or anything.
What happens when the jar is empty the next day?
Just rinse and repeat.
That sounds incredibly healthy, and I can't imagine anything going wrong with that. Does anybody know what that would actually do to you? Does anybody have an idea if you actually did that? Sounds unhealthy.
I'm sure Koss got a hold of a honey jar back when he was deployed and just housed it. What's the effect, Mickey? Did you get sick after?
I just too much honey when I was about 4 years old and throwing up. Not a lot of honey on the deployment, mostly protein shakes and energy drinks.
I used to do a couple tablespoons of honey when I used to play hockey, just for some quick boost in energy. This is before they had all the quick energy bars and stuff like that.
That actually sounds reasonable, though. You know what I mean? A couple teaspoons, tablespoons of honey before like a massively taxing calorie event seems reasonable. I'm just talking about that whole jar of honey concept every day. There's no way that could be good for you. Okay, here's a question. I mean, I don't know that anybody actually knows the answer to this, but why is the price still at $59,000? We're in August.
I know. I guess the odds have changed pretty heavily on the presidential campaign, and the Harris campaign is committed to appointing the 58 gang to every cabinet position in the entire White House, and so they will be there for quite a long time. And so I guess that's getting them to hold tight. A predicament, because the 58 gang is pro-Bitcoin, but they're going to be holding cabinet spots for 4 years, so I'm sure they're weighing out like a lot of stuff.
Okay, for real, for one second. You've got Germany selling, you've got the United States selling, you've got Mount Gox moving, you've got Celsius moving. I just saw a thing this morning that Mount Gox has transferred $784 million worth of Bitcoin. Again, these are rumors of distribution, so on and so forth, but that stuff is in play. The other really interesting thing that I saw is the number of wallets that hold more than 1,000 Bitcoin have gone up massively. If this chart's data is correct, it's like fascinating. It's one of those things, you know, it's like people who have the capacity, or entities, whatever, that have the capacity to accumulate 1,000 Bitcoin right now. That's no small amount, right? What does that come out? That's like 60 million today. So some people with deep pockets are starting to figure it out, apparently.
I think it's a combination of Bitcoin being a lot of people's rainy day fund, and with the economy being what it is, and I don't know if you all saw that they're revising the job numbers down an extra 1 million jobs from what was reported all of this year. So I imagine there's a lot of people struggling and having to liquidate little bits of their Bitcoin at a time to not lose their mortgage and their house. And the people that are in certain positions can scoop that up. And I think we are having a big distribution phase, but chart-wise, we are in a huge macro bull flag from the bottom, going from 15 to 73K, and now we've been sideways consolidating. So it's actually very healthy market structure. And Bitcoin has these phases where for 100 to 200 days, it goes sideways at certain points in the bull market, making it very uninteresting to people that maybe aren't, you know, Bitcoiners. So a lot of things in play, but that's what I see. And if this flag eventually breaks to the upside, there's going to be a big spike of volatility up at least 10 to 20,000 above 70K. So that's what I see from what I'm gathering, but feel free to completely go against what I just said.
I think that was pretty spot on. Dr. Jeff Ross posted something on Noster yesterday, and he said that this range bound is kind of right in line with everything else. He said that we should have peaked right around 125 at the last all-time high. So 40 to 60% of the range of 125 is anywhere from 50K to 75K. So he says we're right in range bound. And he was talking all year about the bull run really starting at the end of August, start of September. So
you guys see that gold is shattering all records right now. The gold bugs are rejoicing. I bet you Peter Schiff is like probably out there pooping all over Bitcoin.
I saw two notes about that. So first is gold tends to precede Bitcoin by weeks or months. And so that's sort of a positive sign for Bitcoin. And then I think it was it the last 10 or 20 years? So if you inflate, like, yeah, okay, great, gold's making all-time highs. But if you adjust the rate of return for inflation, yeah, I don't think it kept up with inflation for the past, like, 15, 20 years. So it's sort of like, sick, man. It's like that meme with the champagne where the guy's in last place.
He's crying. This is so great. I know what that feels like. I was a gold guy for many years. It's brutal. It's brutal. Don't do it. If you're thinking about doing it, I would highly suggest don't do it. It's very painful. It's depressing. Makes you question all of your choices. It's just bad. Okay. In other news, El Salvador apparently is launching an education program where they are going to educate all the government employees, from what it looks like, or a huge chunk of them, in El Salvador. That is mind-blowing that a government is going to expend resources to teach their people about Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And, you know, when you look at like the how they're training young folks to be developers and bringing high quality education there, and some of the other things they're doing in childhood education, and then this with the government employees, they're planting long seeds. Like these aren't as fun and exciting as adding Bitcoin to the balance sheet, but as far as like planting long term seeds, it's massive. And you know, some of the impacts you won't see of these programs for 5 or 10 years, but by the time you see them, it's not like other places are going to be able to replicate them in like a week or a month or a year. They'll be so far ahead, and so it's really it's massive.
I agree. I think it's one of the biggest things. I don't think it's small news at all. You know, could you imagine if the things that this group of people know about how the system works, if you could just transplant that knowledge to all of the citizens, make them really understand money and the system and how it works, you would have a change tomorrow. The biggest thing holding Bitcoin back is the education gap that most people just don't understand it. Actually, Alex, I saw your post yesterday. It was like, what's the biggest pushback you get from no-coiners? And like, yeah, a lot of people just don't understand it. They just don't get it.
I think that's right. It's you still see it all the time, you know, like I've been posting a lot on LinkedIn lately, and like the TradFi people, it just like they're you could just tell they can't stand it. It drives them crazy because they don't understand it. They don't understand why it's doing what it's doing. You hear all the typical opinions as to why it will never work, so on and so forth. But it's all the old stuff. You know, we've all heard it before. The typical FUD, the typical never seems like these particular FUD questions or these particular objections, they just never go away. They just get regurgitated over the years. And it's the journey, right? It's the journey that all of us have been down. We know how it goes. Like everybody who understands Bitcoin has been down this pathway. And every one of us probably at some point had the same freaking objections because they're pretty common. I mean, it's just apparently the way people think.
Hey, Alex, so do you take the time when you post on LinkedIn, do you counter all of the FUD? Do you respond to all of the comments?
It depends. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I can tell that they're so mentally entrenched that there's nothing I can say that will matter. If I think they're... The thing about LinkedIn is that, like, all right, there's a saying about, you know, when you're getting into a debate with somebody on the internet, like, the only reason you would want to do that really is if you have an audience and you might be able to convince the audience by debating the person, because many times you're never going to change the mind of the person, right? So it just, I guess the answer is it depends. If I think there's going to be an audience that will learn from the debate, maybe I'll take the time to do it. Otherwise, I'll just troll them and shit talk them because no time.
Well, I think it's a great idea. It's something I've been thinking about, and probably more Bitcoiners should, because it's a place we don't really like to go. It is so TradFi, but those are the people we want to be talking to. So I'm glad you brought that up.
It's wide open, by the way. Encourage you guys all to do it. LinkedIn is fertile ground. Like, hardly anybody's posting on there.
Yeah, I've been trying. Really not getting much engagement at all, actually.
Yeah, it takes a minute. You want to know what the secret is? I'll tell you. Videos. Take videos, put them on LinkedIn, they blow up. Like, there was one video I did on there, this would have been a while ago, but almost 300,000. So it's not like I have a lot of followers on LinkedIn. I don't. Like, I have almost 10 times as many followers on Twitter as I do on LinkedIn. But the crazy part is I get way more reach on LinkedIn than I do on Twitter. And I gain followers faster on LinkedIn than I do on Twitter. So, and just some thoughts.
Do you mean your own videos where you're explaining Bitcoin or talking about Bitcoin or just sharing even like a sailor?
No, I just steal everybody else's videos. I'll steal videos from NBC. I'll steal videos from Bitcoin Magazine. I'll steal sailor videos. I'll steal everybody's videos. Granted, I attribute them when I post it. I'm like, yo, heard this from so-and-so. It's just the format. The algorithm fucking loves videos.
I'm going to definitely try that. I really, really appreciate that insight. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm going to try that too, because lately when I get a like on LinkedIn, I feel like Will Smith in I Am Legend when he sees the mannequin and he's driving by. He's like, hey, Fred, what the hell are you doing out here, Fred? You know, like, I freak out and I'm like, shit. So I'm going to try that for sure.
Yeah, let's hit it. Let's flood LinkedIn with Bitcoiners. They're going to love that. Good morning, Gabe Lord. What's up, brother?
Hey, good morning. I'm using a different set of technology. Am I coming through?
Oh, you sound great.
Awesome. Yeah, LinkedIn, it's like you said. I mean, there are a lot of people out there that are, I mean, I really see it as people that are literally stuck in the matrix, and they haven't just had an opportunity to have a real accurate introduction. And the important thing to remind ourselves of is they're going to hear about it and they're going to get information at some point one way or another. And so in some ways, it's really up to us to decide if they're going to get accurate information or if they're going to get taken advantage of, because there are elements that exist that do not want them to actually know the truth and the light about Bitcoin. And they want them to think that, hey, when you hear about this, check out this ETF. Yeah, this is the way to go. And they don't want them to understand self-custody. They don't want them to understand the true implications on freedom that come from them engaging in this the absolute best possible way. So they're out there. The algo, like you said, Alex, it responds in different ways. And there's a formula like anything else. When there's a relatively immediate reaction, specifically in the form of comments to your post, then it scoots up the algorithm a little bit, especially when you can get an immediate comment and then you react to that comment, especially when people are tagging each other in those comments, it moves it up the algorithm. And so, you know, if you got a little circle of friends and you want to start kind of giving each other a boost on LinkedIn, then, you know, tell your little circle of friends, say, hey, I just posted this and go give me some comments. And it doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be an in-depth analysis, but just, hey, great point, man. You're real freaking smart. And then say, hey, thanks, man. You're smart too. And it just moves on up and then your visibility continues to grow. But consistency helps. It'll move it on up the pipe. But I mean, specifically from, I'm always going to drift into the veteran, perspective here, but I mean, part of Operation Bitcoin, what we're doing is we're going out and we're looking into for veterans to go bring them into this, you know, and that's the larger Bitcoin veterans mission as well. And so this really, they're out there because during the transition period from leaving the military, that is one thing that they're being equipped with that could be helpful to them, is they're being told to go through and create a LinkedIn profile. And it's actually part of their out processing from the military, as far as I understand. Probably a couple guys on this call that could run this in this room that can elaborate on that. But they're going through and they're creating LinkedIn profiles. And so they're there. And it's just a matter of going out and talking to them and getting connected, making the information accessible, and getting a hold of them before they get a bunch of other garbage pumped into their minds that's going to mislead them and effectively keep them trapped in the machine that they are working to separate themselves from. So those are my thoughts. And I know, a lot of people look at it and it's the boomer network and it's this and it's that. But there's people out there that need to be set free. Not only do they need to be set free, but they bring skills and they bring ideas and they bring value to our efforts if they're given the opportunity to do that. So those are my thoughts.
Hell yeah. Let's go. Get on the mission.
Does the same apply to Facebook? Does anyone know? I haven't been there in like 7 years, so I have no idea what's going on over there.
Dude, Facebook is a living nightmare. And I do still dabble on there for that specific reason, because I have to believe there's a diamond in the rough that is out there. But don't scroll on it, because it'll just make you despise everything about existence.
Hate your life. It'll make you hate humanity. It'll probably make you stupid. Stupider, like, you know, the typical person who's on Facebook has an IQ of probably around 50. So.
Yeah, it sucks. And I'll tell you this, it is much more difficult to navigate the algorithm there. For instance, if I post a picture of something that one of my kids, like the first day of school, okay, if you post a picture of the first day of school, time goes so fast, slow down time, blah, 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 hug your people, they're, you know, nothing lasts forever, then you'll get like every single person in your network will see that immediately, and they'll post and they'll heart and they'll love and all this other stuff. But and I have an example of that from this week, but I posted something similar to that. And then the next day I posted a screenshot of the debt clock and said, here you go. This is, you know, what we're looking at. Boom, boom, boom. Couple of comments, real short, put a link in there. Links usually go up in the algorithm, put a picture in there. Those usually go up. And I had two people that interacted with that post. So there wasn't much different. There was a picture, there was information, but they're watching that very closely. And you know, I say they're watching it, but they have systems in place that are filtering out things like that. And it's a pretty effective filtering system. So there is that. And so it's something that I'm finding works a little bit better is to create a group and then invite a bunch of people to that group and then post things to that group specifically that contain the content that you're working to disseminate. And then you're going to get a little bit of a better reach. But by and large, it's a wasteland, and it makes you feel stupid. So if you're susceptible to feeling stupid already, stay away from Facebook. and just go with the echo chamber that you're currently in. But I will say,
if you're already on kind of the dumber side of the spectrum, just don't do it at all, because you're risking becoming much, much dumber.
You might be lost forever. Yeah. So don't do it, man, because that tide will pull you out quick. But yeah, it's an interesting landscape. But I do want to say that I feel like there's almost a duty and a moral obligation. And I think that I see a lot of people in here that very likely feel the same way. But when you see the light, when you know the truth, we have to tell other people about it. Okay, you can't just take that light and put it under a basket. Okay, you got to put it up on a lampstand, and you got to shine it out there, and you got to reach out, and you got to share it with people. Because it not only does it serve them, but you know, it serves all of us, and it's good for everybody. You know, that rising tide that lifts all boats, it's important to contribute. And so that's a way that each of us can pass on the gift that we've been given by sharing it with other people. So I'm done monopolizing this conversation for now.
Can I jump in here? First time caller, long time listener.
Good morning, brother.
Hey, how are you? Gabe, you know, to kind of follow up, sorry, I'm outside. But to follow up, Gabe, like after action review for some of the engagement or engagements with fellow veterans, like what are you seeing, like as far as your approach, your feedback, the adoption, the understanding, the education, like are there any tidbits or of information or, you know, kind of like what you're seeing bringing people on and kind of adopting what we've all been going through and kind of going through that process? Like, what are your interactions been like since implementing what you've been doing, you know, especially with, you know, me Premier Bitcoin and all that good stuff. So I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, great question. So with Operation Bitcoin, when I first started, you know, formally going out and engaging with groups of veterans, it was, yeah, I took a similar approach to how we would with anybody, you know, just talking about what is money, talking about the history of it, so forth and so on. And that's all relevant, of course, and it's important because it lays the groundwork, and it establishes the narrative and the roadmap that led us to, you know, the course of events and eventual discovery / invention of Bitcoin and where we are now. But something that I learned, and this was from reactions to those that were being introduced to it, was many of them were jumping straight to the implications on freedom and self-sovereignty, and this being something that truly is mission oriented, that they want to get involved in. It's just, I couldn't make it through an entire presentation without somebody, you know, beginning to get, you know, they start to get twitchy and say, well, what the hell are we going to do about this? You know, when you start to talk about inflation and fractional reserve banking and debasement and, you know, and start going into that, and people start to realize, what the hell, man, this isn't right. This is, something's going on here. Well, what are we going to do to fix this? And before I even start introducing them to the concepts, before I even start telling them about Satoshi Nakamoto and cypherpunks and Bitcoin as the solution, they start getting pissed off. And then we say, okay, we'll check it out. All right, you know, let's talk about this and let's talk about how it works. And they want to get plugged in, they want to get involved. So that's the reaction by and large that I get. Now, obviously, 100% of the people that I talk to, they're not all going to be as excited as others. Some are going to say, "Yeah, well, this is, you know, it's a scam, and I don't trust technology. And, you know, what if China hits us with an EMP, or we get hit by, you know, a meteorite, and all those things?" And that's cool. Not everybody's ready, but you know, we leave them with resources and ways that they can re-engage when they're ready to go ahead and step forward into the light. But yeah, by and large, hopefully I'm answering your question, that the reaction that I receive from the majority of the people that I talk to that are veterans is an interest in getting involved beyond just obtaining and holding and transacting or storing, you know, building up their own wealth in Bitcoin. I see people that are interested in getting involved. People that want to get plugged in and that want to contribute to the mission, because they feel it. They have felt it, especially when you begin to tie in the veteran perspective and start to understand the global impact that the fiat system has and its relationship and driving energies behind the forever wars. That's, I mean, people that have been a part of that take this personally. Okay, if you've been in a combat zone and if you've seen the impact that this war machine from this military-industrial complex is having on the actual lives of human beings, and you've been a part of that, there's no way to not take that personally and to want to be a part of this, and then to find ways to help prevent our kids and future generations from having to continue on this cycle. So to answer your question, I see a willingness to get involved beyond just obtaining, transacting it, and storing their own Bitcoin. I see people that are, you know, that truly do want to get involved in this as a mission, and it's a hell of a thing.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm been, you know, curious to see what your, you know, your interactions have been. But yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Gabe, that was great. Also, having people in a high emotional state, sometimes that's what it takes to get action out of people. And I will say from my own experience that I love your methodology, because anyone that I have successfully orange-pilled has been the people that understand the problem before they can appreciate the solution. If you try to get someone in, like, talk about Bitcoin first without explaining to them, well, this is what you're currently involved in, then how can they appreciate the solution when they don't understand what problem it solves? So that's amazing.
Took the words right out of my mouth. I was absolutely going to say, I love that methodology. Piss them off. Give them the solution. Bob Van Kirk, good morning. Haven't seen you in a minute.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
It's going fantastic, man. How you been?
Good. I just had an experience last week that people might find interesting related to the topic. Had a friend call me up who's on a church board and said, hey, we got someone who just passed away, unfortunately, but they gave our church 60 grand. And I have a meeting tonight to talk to them about what to do with it. And I know you're a big Bitcoin guy. How would you approach it? And so I just gave him a few talking points, started out with the problem, talked about what that meant for that chunk of money and the church, and then made a suggestion of a 1-10% allocation, not to sound, you know, like a crazy person for someone starting out, knowing that we're talking to people in their 60s and 70s making this decision for this church. And I was surprised later that night, just off of a few talking points, again, talking through the problem, what that means for that chunk of money, and then what the solution is, that they went with a 10% allocation to Bitcoin. So I think it's happening slowly. People are opening up their minds to this solution, and we just need to continue to talk and articulate what the problem is and what it means for people, not just what the problem is, but what it actually means for them. And then they can see the solution.
Hey, Bob, that's awesome to hear. And, a couple of brief points from having worked with organizations collectively holding Bitcoin, and I don't know how the infrastructure of that group works, but you should definitely have them set up some kind of committee to work on ongoing education in conjunction with that allocation, because as you know, like, things can get tough at times, and the group mind holding Bitcoin, it just takes a couple of naysayers to fan the flames of FUD, and then, you know, the group doesn't know what to do and they panic. So that may already be in place, but obviously the more educated they are, the more they're going to be able to withstand, you know, the emotional roller coaster of volatility.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, you know, we do need to think of the, you know, second and third order effects of, you know, the obvious volatility that Bitcoin has. I think the good news here is with your example, Dom, it's starting small, right? Which forces them to start paying attention to it. It's a small bet, but it's a hedge against, you know, the other $54,000 that they're probably going to put in a bank CD. So I think they're a little less worried about that. We kind of, I told the gentleman I was talking to set expectations with them that it's, you know, should be looked at as a longer term play and probably something in the order of 4 years. Don't put money in there that you're not willing to just sit on for quite a while. And so I think they get it, but yeah, the education is an important piece. And you're right. A couple of naysayers can really spoil the pot there.
I would contend that depends upon you how you deal with the naysayers. Like it's also an opportunity. Like if you've got, you know, it's imagine, you know, stand up guys, you know, there's always the heckler in the audience. It's either a disaster or, you know, it depends on how the response is, right? So it's an opportunity actually to completely dismantle their objection in a public forum that helps everybody else understand the answer to the objection.
I agree. I think you have to really make people defend their position at this point. I mean, how do you deny the insurmountable debt, the constant overspending on an annual basis? Every time a budget comes out, we have a fiscal deficit in Congress. Like, how do you defend that at this point? And I think that's where you have to go with it. It's kind of flipping it on its head and saying to these folks that are naysayers, like, I want you to come up with a solution. And when you can, you know, we should all know about it. But then you also need to take that to your congressman, to your senator, to the president, and they need to solve this problem with your solution. So please give it to me.
Yeah. The one thing, Alex, just with what you're saying on the opportunity, sometimes you can't always be there. And so, like, again, with the unions, when unions get off zero with a small dollar amount, I always advise they set up some standing committee consisting of some knowledgeable people in Bitcoin within their group. It may be even some naysayers within their group, but a committee that's working on education, because as you know, when the SEC sues, you know, Coinbase and Binance, or some company collapses and there's chaos, you can't always be there. And if there isn't, you know, some trusted source and ongoing education, the naysayers can quickly, very quickly build momentum for a group to panic and call in a meeting and say, hey, we need to pull out this investment. It's just a bad idea for whatever reason. The government's going to get upset with us, or there's some really big issues, some things I read, all the FUD stuff. And if you have that central standing committee that they've been receiving information continuously from, they're going to look to that committee more than the hysteria going through an organization. So, you know, again, I strongly recommend some standing committee that can be as simple as, hey, here's an email that just breaks down self-custody into some very simple steps, like, or, you know, general basic info, because the group will trust that committee. And when tough things happen, they'll look to that committee for, like, guidance to see that, oh, everything's okay. Like, we got an update from this group.
Yeah, that's fantastic feedback. Thank you for explaining that. I agree. You're right on the money. AC, we're going to go to you in 1 second. Really quick, would like to hit our partners, because they're the reason we're able to do this show. So our first one is Silent. You can check them out at slnt.com/BTCVets to save 15%. Basically, they do Faraday bags. So those things protect your electronics, whether it's your hardware wallets or whatever, your phone, whatever you want to basically cut off from signal. Or protect from, you know, weird things like EMP, all that other kind of stuff. So check them out. Also, shout out to Black Sheep Ammunition. These guys are fantastic, veteran-owned and operated ammunition company that hooked us up for our range day in Nashville. Also, solosatoshi.com. These guys are really cool. Check them out for sure. They're doing the bid axes, and their whole objective is to get as many bid axes out there as possible. And so they're selling them for really low prices. Love these guys. And then finally, punchplate.com. Punchplate is where you can get basically seed plates. They're steel. They're resistant to fire and water and all the things. So check them out. Thank you. All right, AC, what's up, man? Cannot hear you.
Is it just me?
I can't hear him.
You have to press the mic button, AC.
He did.
I think he is. He might be joining from a PC.
Do you join us if you want, AC? Well, the gold people are definitely rejoicing. I think it's ridiculous. Just do the math real quick. I was buying gold at like 750. So today, what would that be in percentage gains terms at 2,500?
Somewhere between 300 to 400%.
300 to 400%. Now, in the same time span. Well, that if you rewind the clock to when gold was 750, that was near the beginning of Bitcoin. So if you just put your money in Bitcoin instead of gold, let's say rewind all the way back to like 2011, it looks like 84.7800,000% and some change.
I think the interesting thing about gold is, you know, it has these periods of mania, but so does Bitcoin. I think the thing is that for gold, it's a lot fewer and farther between than Bitcoin, right?
Oh, for sure, dude. Like anybody who's a gold investor, like they're probably rejoicing right now, feels good. But the reality is that you can go decades through decades of pain and it's just not fun. Bitcoin, interestingly, there's a similar pattern, but it's much, the time periods are lower, right? You've got, well, there's this interesting stat, like, I think if I'm not mistaken on the numbers, it's something close to this. 90%-ish of all gains in Bitcoin occur on roughly 10 days out of each year, which means that most days of the year, it's either sideways to down. So you got to be willing to like deal with a bunch of nonsense in order to get those 10 days of massive, massive upside.
I think it's somewhere between like 10 and 13. And the interesting thing is if you miss even part of one of those days, it can be argued that it's not even really worth owning that whole time.
Right. So I guess the lesson there is don't trade it because you're in for a world of pain. It's better to be time in the market than timing the market. So the saying goes. Want to shout out to Macro Minutes in the audience. What's up, brother? We've got about 5-6 minutes left for today. Let's go around and get some closing comments before we wrap up here.
Communism sucks. See you guys. I got to go to a meeting.
See you later, Mr. Dapper. He's so dapper, isn't he? Look at him.
He really is.
Hey, I just want to give I bought a tallow fried donut and a coffee from a place in Portland, Maine called Hi-Fi Donuts with Bitcoin yesterday. So that's a win. I just want to, if anybody's in the area, check out Hi-Fi Donuts. They accept Bitcoin for tallow fried donuts. It's a positive.
Hell yeah. Tallow fried even. What a based business. Let's go.
We probably don't have time, but Lisa Huff, if you hear us and are available, I would love to hear. I'm sure everyone would love to hear how Honey Badger is going in Riga right now. If you have a little report for us.
Is she in the room? I don't see her.
No, but I see her listening. So if she can jump up here like she's supposed to, she knows we need to hear from her.
All right. Any other closing comments?
RFK dropping out of the race possibly on Friday.
Oh, yeah. Saw that. That would be, I think that would be significant because he's probably commanding at this point, probably what, 8 to 15 points?
He'd definitely help out quite a bit.
Terrence laughed. Is he not commanding 8 to 15 points? Am I wrong?
So he can absolutely tilt the election. It's going to be a close one, I think. So he can affect swing voters in the swing states, and it's not going to take much, even if he only moves 1% to 2% of the voters.
Okay.
I don't
Terrence,
think... 15.
Okay, if he drops out, who does his people vote for?
I think Trump, at least, and definitely the more free market folks will vote Trump. There are a lot of RFK supporters who are very progressive, and they're very pissed off at the Democratic Party. We saw this happen with Bernie Sanders when they kneecapped him and kept him from becoming the nominee through their rules and authoritarian tendencies that both parties, I would argue, have.
Well, Terrence, you're going to need to stick to racquetball. That's actually incorrect.
You're out of order, Dom.
Dude, not sure why you're talking to me. I said nothing. I'm sitting here on mute drinking coffee.
That was Gabe, for sure.
Coleman, closing comments, and then we will wrap.
I really don't have anything extra put out. I think it was a good show today. Covered quite a bit. I think just keep trying to, like Marty Bent says, white pill people. Just do little actions. Go out, just like Gabe did, and support local businesses that are accepting Bitcoin. Go on LinkedIn and just talk about Bitcoin. Even if you only have three people listening, it's three people who haven't heard that view before, and it just kind of spreads like wildfire.
For those of you who don't know, Coleman is a base dude. He's a former combat infantryman. He's a canine trainer, owns a business doing that. And he's going to be on the Bitcoin Veterans podcast soon, talking about all those things, implementing, accepting Bitcoin and payment. He's got like his employees all using Bitcoin if they want to buy snacks in his snack room. Apparently they pay in Bitcoin. He's like a full-on maxi spreading the good word. So looking forward to that one. By the way, we do those podcasts once a week. They're live video podcasts. We do them every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Check them out. That's a wrap. Thank you to all of the speakers who hang out here and help us bring this message of hope to the people. That's the mission, guys. There's 8 billion people on this planet that need to know about this thing, and y'all know what to do. Every single one of you is important. So thanks to all of you for being here. Thanks to producer Jacob. Appreciate you, too. We're going to continue to do this every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. We will see you all tomorrow. Love you guys. Everybody go out there. Have a great day today and crush it.